All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Jitaya. Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namo. Namaste Saraswati Devi. Gauravani Pacharana Vasesa Samadhi Paspajari Sitarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatara Kamalam. Sri Guru Vaishnavasta. Sri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahayanam Raghunatham Vitam Tamasajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Saika Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Do you have any Bhagavad Gita?
Just a cover, I don't know.
So it's April 4th, 2012, in Inishrath, Ireland. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, The Atrocities of King Kamsa, Text 36. Kim Shema Sura Vibhudar Asamyuga Vitaktanai Raho Jusa Kim Harina Sambhuna Vavana Kasha Kim Indrit Kim Indran Alpa Virena Brahmana Vatapasyata. Kim.
Kim.
What is there to fear?
Shema.
In a place where there is a scarcity of the ability to fight. Shurai. By the demigods. Vibhudai. By such powerful persons. Asamyuga vikat anai. By boasting and talking uselessly away from the fighting. Rahajusa, who is living in a solitary place within the core of the heart. Kim Harina. What is the fear from Lord Vishnu? Shambhuna. And what is the fear from Lord Shiva? Va. Either. Vana Okasha. Who is living in the forest. Kim Indrena. What is the fear of Indra? Alpavirena. He is not at all powerful, having no power to fight with you. Brahmana. And what is the fear from Brahma? Va. Either. Tapasthita. Who is always engaged in meditation. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods, we have nothing to fear. So why are they not afraid of the demigods? What was their argument?
Because they're boasting uselessly when they're away from them.
Right. The only time they boast is
when they're not actually
fighting. As for Lord Vishnu, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he is always engaged in austerities and meditation. So why aren't they worried about Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva?
Because engaged in meditation.
Yeah, they're all what? All three of them are what?
Busy.
Busy doing what, basically?
Meditation.
Well, meditation and hiding, kind of. They're out of the... they're sort of, you know, out of the main arena. The other demigods tended by Indra are devoid of prowess. So they already talked about the demigods in general, but here they're saying Indra specifically, he what?
No prowess.
No prowess. The word here is alpa virena. Do you know what a vira means?
Strength.
Strength. So an alpa means very small. So they have very small strength. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Purport. Kamsa's ministers told Kamsa that all the exalted demigods had fled in fear of him. One had gone to the forest, one had gone to the heart, and one to engage in tapasya. So the reasons, they said the reasons that Vishnu's in the heart, the reason that Shiva's in the forest, and the reason that Brahma's doing tapasya is what? Fear of?
You.
Who's you? Kamsa. So Krishna's in everyone's heart because he's afraid of Kamsa. Lord Shiva's in the forest because he's afraid of Kamsa. Brahma's in meditation because he's afraid of Kamsa. Thus you can be free from all fear of the demigods, they said. Just prepare to fight. Okay, let's look at the Sanskrit. Kim kshena surar vibhudar. So kshema. We have in the Bhagavad Gita two verses that deal with yoga kshema. Anyone know what those two verses are?
One is 9:22.
And what does it say? Yoga kshema?
Vahamyaham.
Which means?
I carry what you lack and I preserve what you have.
I preserve what you have and I carry what you lack, yes. So yoga means to connect. Something that you don't have yet. And kshema means something you already have is being protected. So kshema is security for what you already have, and yoga is getting something more. So kshema is security, peacefulness. This is security, there's no problem. So kim kshena sura. So what of the demigods in kshema, of the demigods in security? Vibhudaya. So vibhu means something that's very great. So surayar vibhudaya. Vibhu is big, the big demigods. Asamyuta. So what's asamyuga? When there's no fighting. So when they're in security and there's no fighting, then they're boasting. Right? Raho jusha, he's hiding in the heart. Kim harina sambunava. What is the danger from hari or shambhu? Right. Vanaukasa, gone to the vana, they've gone to the forest. Kim Indriya Alpavirena. What of Indra? He has Alpavirena. He has very small strength. Brahmana va tapasyata. And Brahman and Lord Brahma is doing tapasya. The demigods boast uselessly, while away from the battlefield, only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Do we all know people like this? Maybe we're like this sometimes. Now, Prabhupada talks about the monkeys who said they were going to cross the ocean to rescue Sita. Oh, if I'm talking too fast or if I'm saying something you don't understand, please ask me. How many of you here have English as your second, third, fourth, or fifth language? Okay, about half. So, if I'm talking too fast or if I say anything you don't understand, please ask me. Try to speak more slowly. So, Prabhupada said the monkeys, they were bragging that maybe they could jump, but they couldn't do anything. So, Prabhupada compared this to people who say they're going to take sannyas and actually they can't do it. You know, just bragging. So, it's very, very easy to brag. Of course, we had... Uttar did this also in the Mahabharata when the Pandavas were living in disguise in Virat, and Duryodhan was pretty sure that he had figured out where the Pandavas were in Virat, because Kichak had been killed, and he figured only Bhima could do that. So he had the whole Kuru army attack the kingdom of Virat with the idea that it would bring out the Pandavas, who would then reveal themselves. So Uttar said, actually at the same time, Duryodhana arranged for another kingdom, I forget who it was, to attack Virat from another side. So everybody had gone with the king for the king of Virat to take care of this one army, and then the Kurus attacked. And when the Kurus attacked, there was nobody there to defend the kingdom other than Uttar, who was probably about 14 years old, 14, 15 years old, so like Janu's age. And he was very proud, and he was saying, I'll defend the whole kingdom single-handedly, because the armies were all gone. And Draupadi, who was in disguise, she convinced Uttar that he should take Arjuna, who was disguised as Brihanala, as a eunuch, as a chariot driver. So when they get out and see the Kuru army, then all of Uttar's bragging was finished. As soon as he saw Bhishma and Drona and Kripacharya and Ashwatthama and Duryodhan and Dushasan, then all of a sudden he said, I'm not going to fight anymore. So when he was in the palace in front of his mother and his sister and the other ladies there, and I'm going to go single-handedly and defeat the Kurus. And when Draupadi was saying, you know, bring Brihadnala as your charioteer, he said, what am I need with this eunuch? I can defeat everybody myself. You know, he was very boasting. And then as soon as he got there, he got off the chariot and started to run away. He said, I can't fight with these guys. And then, of course, Brihadnala revealed that he was Arjuna. He got his weapons out of a tree, and Arjuna single-handedly defeated all of the Kurus. Now, he wasn't afraid. So Arjuna did the opposite. Arjuna didn't boast in front of anyone, but he actually went and did it. Whereas Uttar, he was boasting, and when it came to doing it, he couldn't do anything. So sometimes we meet people like this. You know, oh, I can do this, oh, I can do this, oh, I'm good at this, so, you know. And then when it actually comes to the situation, they don't do anything. Sometimes we meet people who are the opposite. They don't say much, but they deliver. So best to always under-promise and over-deliver. Don't over-promise and under-deliver, but under-promise and over-deliver. That's much better. If you say, I'll get this done by the 15th and you get it done by the 12th, that's much better than if you say you'll get it done by the 12th and you get it done by the 15th. Or promising too much, you know, thinking that we're bigger than we are, saying, you know, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do the other thing. Okay, so he's accusing the demigods of being like this. By the way, are the demigods like that? No. Not at all. The demigods certainly have an actual heroism. We have so many examples in the Shastra of the demigods fighting on the battlefield. They're real heroes. So the demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods we have nothing to fear. As for Lord Vishnu, he's in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he's gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he's always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Alpavirya. So is that true? That Indra just has a tiny bit of power? No. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. And Prabhupada explains that their mentality was that that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who were not conquered even by Hiranyakashipu, that they were in the heart, in the forest, and in Tapasya because they were afraid of Kamsa. That was how they interpreted things. So these demon followers of Kamsa and Kamsa, they're trying to get happiness. They're trying to get peace. Don't fear. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. What is the fear? Don't have any fear. Be peaceful. Be courageous, be sure. So Krishna talks in the Bhagavad Gita about peacefulness. And he says, how can there be any happiness without peace? So everyone is looking for peace. Peace is the foundation for happiness. You cannot be happy if you don't have peace. What do we mean by peace? Do we mean by peace just sort of, is that what we mean by peace? I mean, there's all sorts of happiness you couldn't have if that's what you meant by peace. Isn't there also happiness and adventure and excitement? Right? I mean, why do people read so many adventure books and see so many adventure films if you can't have happiness without peace? Why do people take risks? Why do they do things that are exciting or unsure? Why do people gamble? A lot of people do things that are not peaceful in that sense. Don't we do a lot of things in the Hare Krishna movement that are not peaceful like that? Do we just like sit down in the forest and just go, om? So is that the kind of peace that Krishna is talking about? What do you think? I'm asking.
Is it non-attachment? So you can do any activity if you're not attached to the outcome.
Yes, exactly. It's a kind of non-attachment. What else is it?
Your mind isn't disturbed.
Your mind isn't disturbed yet.
No anxiety.
No anxiety. No fear. Fearlessness. We're talking about this yesterday. This goes on today because it's the same basic theme. That the demons are trying to find fearlessness. They're trying to find... We can also call it faith. We can also call it courage. Peace doesn't mean just non-activity floating in the ocean. It means, yes, non-attachment, no fear, no anxiety, a sense of certainty. Right? What we would call faith, again, faith or courage, a sense of certainty. So the demons are looking for the sense of certainty, because without it you can't be happy. Now, first of all, are we convinced that without peace you can't be happy? So the example I usually give is, let's say you had a really nice meal in front of you. You know, your favorite food. Pizza and ice cream and gulab jamuns or samosas or whatever you like. And standing behind you, there's a police officer who says, I have a warrant for your arrest. You've been accused of a crime. And I'm just waiting for the go-ahead from the station to handcuff you. And you've got this big plate in front of you. Could you enjoy eating it?
Not so much.
Not so much, right? They have, when people are going to be executed for a crime, they're allowed to have a last meal of whatever they want. You know that, right? When people are on death row, they're allowed to order a last meal of whatever they want to eat. The government will provide for them. Do you think they can enjoy it? Would you be able to enjoy a meal if you knew that as soon as you finished, you were going to be executed? Or you were going to be imprisoned. So all of material enjoyment is exactly like that. All of it. Everything we're enjoying materially, it's going to end. We don't know how, we don't know when, but we know that it will. And it could end right in the middle of our enjoyment. You know, there's that game Musical Chairs. Did you ever play that when you were a child? Everybody know what I'm talking about? Everybody? Yes? No? We're sleeping? Yes? You all know? Okay. So you don't know when the music stops if you're going to be by a chair or not. So while you're playing the game, you're always worried. You're watching all the chairs and you're watching all the other kids. Where will I be when the music stops? And that's our whole life is like that. You know? When is the music going to stop? And it's not just death, but it's all the little deaths. You know, will this person who loves me now stop loving me? Happens all the time. You know, will my favorite thing break? Happens all the time. And this favorite piece of equipment, or this favorite piece of clothing, or this favorite piece of something, and then it's broken. We're always at being careful, you know, I'm always having to be careful with my equipment. Do I put it in its proper case, and do I put it down carefully, and where is it, and will somebody steal it, or it get broken? Isn't it like that?
Yes.
Everything we're doing all the time, we're filled with fear. Constantly. And it's such a constant part of our lives that we're hardly even aware of it anymore. We just kind of take it as normal, just like the way you guys take cold here. You know, to all of you guys, cold is just the way it is. You know, my body's just cold. It's just normal. You know, those of us who visit, it's like, it's really cold here. but we're conditioned. If you have something that's going on all the time, like we used to have a train going through our backyard, and after the first night, we never heard it anymore. And one day, I had some guests from California. They were sitting on our porch, on our deck, and we were talking, and the train went by. So when the train went by, it was very noisy. We had to stop our conversation. And as soon as the train went by, I started talking again. And the people from California looked at me and said, "Do you usually just sit calmly during an earthquake?" So when you're accustomed to something, you don't notice it anymore. It just becomes part, it just becomes like background noise. So as conditioned souls, this constant anxiety, when will things break? When will I break? When will this body break? How will it break? When will my things break? When will they get lost? When will they get stolen? When will all the sources of my happiness be damaged or destroyed in some way? When is everything I rely on for my happiness, when is it going to be destroyed? So the materialists, or here, they're actually demons. The materialistic people have one way of dealing with the situation, and the devotees have another way of dealing with it. So first we're going to look at how the materialists deal with this. How do the materialists try to find this peace, this certainty of success, this certainty of happiness, some kind of thing, something that's permanent, something that's solid, something that they can have trust in so they can find happiness? And how do the devotees do it? So here we see the demons. First of all, they're reinterpreting situations in their favor. They're seeing that Lord Vishnu is in the heart, and they're interpreting that instead of seeing that Vishnu is all-pervasive and all-powerful. You know, Vishnu is in the heart of every living entity. The Krishna says, I'm giving you the intelligence, I'm guiding you from in the heart. Instead of seeing like that, that Krishna is in everyone's heart, that Vishnu is in everyone's heart, means that he's the guide, the witness, the friend, the controller, Ishwara Paramakrishna. Instead, how do they interpret it? He's scared. So they interpret things in their favor. We're all interpreting things, you know. All of us are looking at the world and having some sort of interpretation of it. So first of all, they interpret the behavior of others and the circumstance of others to mean that they're going to be victorious, that everything's going to work in their favor. Whatever they see, whatever they hear about, whatever they experience, they make a story about it. They spin it. They create some idea about it that they then accept as reality. Everything's going to work out for me. Or Indra, he's not very strong. And then they mentally calculate their own strengths. They think, okay, well, I'm really good at this. Last time I went fighting, those people ran away from me, and this, and I know how to do this, and I'm really good at this thing, and I have this experience, and I've had that experience, so I know I'm going to be successful. They meditate on themselves. They meditate on their own activities. They meditate on their own abilities. They meditate on their own plans. And they meditate on how what they're going to be able to do is going to be successful. Then they make plans and backup plans and backup plans. So, okay, we're going to imprison Vasudev and Devaki and kill all their children. Oops, one of them got away. Okay, backup plan. Let's kill all of the children born within the last 10, 12 days. That doesn't work very well. Okay, let's send demons to Vrindavan. Okay, that doesn't work. Let's invite Krishna and Balaram to the wrestling arena. Let's put a big elephant. You know, let's have the wrestlers. I'll do this, and I'm going to do this to secure my happiness. To make my life secure, I'm going to do this. And, of course, that might not work. All right, well, if that doesn't work, I'll do this. Oh, but that might not work. Okay, if that doesn't work, I'll do this. But that might not work. If that doesn't work, I'll do this. So there's always all these contingency plans. I can try this, I can try this, I can try this, I can try this. Plan making. All right, what else do? They meditate on their success. So this is very popular among the New Agers also. You know, you sit down and you just envision red sports car with beautiful girl next to me. And they actually teach like this. Seriously, I mean, you can buy books and DVDs and you can take seminars on how to meditate on what you want. So these demons are also doing that, and they're meditating. Of course, that does work in the long run. Whatever you think about ekabhavanam yoga dadhikama, Krishna will give you intelligence how to get it, either directly or over some long period of time. He'll engage you in karma. Right? Krishna will engage you in the activities necessary to get what you want. So that's another way they think, okay, we're going to be secure, we're going to meditate on our success, and by our power, they're not thinking that when they do this, that some higher agent is noticing what they want. And they're thinking, by our own power, we will create what we want. They meditate on their enjoyment. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. Siddham, I am powerful. I am enjoying. I am enjoying. I really am enjoying. Yes, I am, I am, I am. You know, I remember doing this when I was 13. I was babysitting, and I started thinking, the children I was babysitting for were sleeping, and I was thinking, what's the purpose of life? I thought, the purpose of life, what's the purpose of life? Yeah. What did Prabhupada say? The purpose of life. He was asked this once in South America. What did he say? The purpose of life is?
Enjoy.
To enjoy. Ananda. And Majjalila 8.138, Prabhupada says that both the Supreme Lord and the living entities have a propensity and a desire for enjoyment. Ananda Maya Vyasat. We want to be happy. So I thought the purpose of life is to be happy. And then I thought, well, am I happy? Now that's interesting right there. Am I happy? And just the fact that you have to ask that question indicates you're not happy. Am I happy? So I made a list of all the things that I had. Oh, I'm getting good grades in school. My parents have a lot of money. I have good friends. I made a whole list. And I looked at the list. I said, I must be happy. I guess I'm happy. So that's actually happiness in the mode of passion, what Krishna describes as mental concoction. I think of it as like a picture of happiness. You know, you take this photograph. Here's my, you know, handsome, strong husband, or my beautiful wife, and my beautiful, attractive, you know, intelligent children. And we're all standing, smiling in front of our big house with our fancy car. You see this in, say, advertisements for cars. They show this sort of pictures. You know, and if it's in the West, you got to have a dog and a swimming pool and really nice clothes. Right? And it's like you take that photograph and you put it up on your wall and you look at it and say, see, I'm happy. Right? So this is what they do. They meditate on their enjoyment. Now, of course, all of these things involve something false. They make up false stories about their enemies, false stories about their obstacles. They have false stories about their own prowess. Their enjoyment even is not real. It's just happening to the body. Prabhupada compares it to what? A bird in a cage, and you're just polishing the cage. You know, if you clean your house and you clean your car and you clean your clothes, but you don't clean your body, you're going to feel yucky. If you're all sweaty and dirty and muddy, no matter how much you clean your house and your clothes and your car, put clean clothes on a dirty body, you know, you're not going to feel very satisfied. Or if you just put petrol in your car and you have electricity in your house and no food in your belly, you're not going to be happy. So we're different from our body. Very different from our body. We're not actually doing, according to Bhagavad Gita chapter 5 and chapter 13, we're not actually doing anything the body's doing. We're just a witness. Something like manipulating a character in a computer game. You've seen people do that? Maybe some of you have done it. You create a character in a computer game and make it jump and make it, I don't know, whatever they do. But you're not doing that. You're not jumping. Or people in a, watching a film. The character gets the beautiful girl or the handsome man and a lot of money and, you know, jumps out of helicopters or whatever, jumps through windows, and they're a big hero. And you're watching the movie and you're like, yes. But you're not experiencing that. You know? You don't have the beautiful girl next to you, or the handsome man, or the money in the bank. It's not actually, you're not actually having anything. So this world also, you know, we think, I'm doing this, I'm getting this, and it's all illusion. And something's happening, but it's not what we think is happening. So it's all based on something false. The whole thing is just false. My enemies are weak, and I'm strong, and I'm doing this, and it's all made up story. None of it's really happening. So there's never any genuine success on a deep level, and there's never even any success in the illusion. So you have the big house, and you have the beautiful family, and you have, you know, the Nobel Prizes or whatever you have, but then it all goes, and who cares anymore? You don't even keep it. That's not real success. Real success is something you get to keep. Virajan Prabhu's calculated that in universal time, this life is 8 billionths of a second. You know? So if you've got money and health and fame and everything for 8 billionths of a second, is that success? I mean, it's just silly. So you could meet some astrologer who said, in your last life, you were a great millionaire. The life before that, you were a world-renowned scientist. The life before that, you had such a wonderful marriage, you and your wife, you and your husband, you were just madly in love with each other your whole life. And the life before that, you discover some cure for a disease, and you say, oh, that's nice. And who cares? You don't have any of that now. It's not even terribly interesting. Yeah, maybe it's interesting for, you know, half an hour. Right? That's not success. And it just goes away like sand. And then the whole universe is destroyed. Bhutva, bhutva, pruyate. Devotee sent me a video the other day of someone who makes pictures in the sand right by the ocean. The pictures last for 3 hours. I mean, beautiful pictures. He takes like a rake and a stick and he makes incredible design, huge designs on the beach. And people stand up on a bridge to see them and take photographs of them. And you see the waves coming in. Washing them away. And so it's all false. There's nothing real. Right? And they're just trying over and over again. Chewing the chewed, as Prahlad Maharaj said. Just trying the same thing over and over and over and over again. That's failing over and over. Well, this time it'll work. Well, this time it'll work. Trying the same thing. Just like sometimes... I remember we used to watch devotional videos that were in Hindi. And one time I put one on and I'm thinking, you know, it's not loud enough. And then I realized there was no subtitles. I was trying to hear the Hindi. I couldn't understand it. So no matter how loudly I turned up the Hindi, I still couldn't understand it. Sometimes people do this, especially with children, even with adults. They'll think, I want to get my child to behave, so I'll punish them. And the child still doesn't behave, so they give a stronger punishment. And that doesn't work. Then they give a stronger punishment. And it doesn't occur to them, maybe punishment's not going to work. Maybe my method's wrong. You know, try something else. If I'm speaking in English to someone who doesn't know English, no matter how loudly I speak English, they're never going to understand what I'm saying. Doing more and more and more of something that doesn't work is not intelligent. So the materialistic people, they're trying something, it doesn't work, and they just do more of it. Let me just do more of it and more of it and more of it. Right? When you're young, you're thinking, like these children, I'm sure, they're thinking, you know, when I get to be 10, then I'll be happy. When I get to be 12, then I'll be happy. Right? And then when you're 12, you think, oh, when I get to be 16, then I'll be happy. When you're 16, and you think, when I get to be 20, then I'll be happy. Right? Then I can stay up till midnight if I want. Nobody will tell me when to go to bed. I can do whatever I want. They don't think that when you're 20, you also have to earn your own money. You know, and then you think, oh, when I get married, then I'll be happy. Oh, when I get children, then I'll be happy. When I have a nice career, then I'll be happy. Oh, when my children grow up, then I'll be happy. You know, when I'm finally finished with married life and I can become a vanaprastha, then I'll be happy. Oh, I made so many mistakes in my life. Oh, if only I had another chance, then I would be happy. And Krishna says, okay, take another chance. Try it again. So they're trying the same thing over and over again. All right. Now that we're suitably depressed, now let's go on to what the devotees do. How do the devotees find peace? How do they find security? So first of all, they interpret everything that's happening as Krishna's desire. Like these demons, they're looking at the world and saying, well, the reason this person is doing this is because they're afraid of me. And the reason this person is doing this is they don't have any power. And actually, I have power. The devotee looks at everything. The same thing. The devotee sees the same thing that the demons see. Devotees are not looking at a different world. But they see it differently. The Prabhupada says in the second chapter of Krishna book that for the materialist, everything is very aggressive. And for the devotees, everything is happily situated. So the devotees know someone's my friend, someone's my enemy. Krishna's allowing that. And Krishna is all good and all merciful. That everything's happening by the supreme direction of Krishna. If someone's acting as my enemy, Krishna's allowing that for my own purification. And I'm an indestructible soul. I can't die. I'm not part of this temporary world. I don't have anything to do with this temporary world. I'm just here doing a service. I'm not here to get something for my enjoyment. I'm here on business. You know, you enter a country. Are you here for tourism or business? So the materialists, they're here for tourism, and we're here for business. You know, we're not here in this material world as a tourist. We're here on Krishna's business, as Krishna's servant, and we see everything. Oh, here's an opportunity for service. Here's an opportunity for service. Prabhupada says the expert business person, they make money when the prices are going up, and they make money when the prices are going down. One story Prabhupada tells, which I just read again recently, was how some very famous businessman got his start from a dead rat. So he had no money. And at that time, the government was paying for anybody who could bring dead rats because it was a plague of rats. So he got a little bit of money from bringing this dead rat into the government, and then he invested that, and then he invested that, and then he invested that, and pretty soon he became a multimillionaire. So the devotee sees everything as an opportunity for Krishna's service. The devotee doesn't see, as explained in 14.22, inauspicious and auspicious. Oh, this is good for me, this is bad for me. No, how can I use this situation for service? How can I use this situation for service? I remember seeing Jamuna and Dinatarani in Mayapur, and they were both just recovered from very serious illness. And Jamuna said, I'm so happy if I could be sick anywhere, I could be sick in Mayapur. Now, I wouldn't think like that. I would think, oh, I finally come to Mayapur, I'm only here for a short time, and here I am sick. And she said, when you're sick in the dham and you're lying down, you're offering dandavats. What a place to be sick. So the devotees see like that. They say, here's an opportunity to do this kind of service. Here's an opportunity to do this kind of service. They're neutral towards external success or failure. Their security is not in whether or not externally they're successful or not. That's a fruit of mentality. I'll be happy if I win. I'll be happy if I make money. I'll be happy if I get this external thing. I'll be happy if I get that external thing. That's all fruit of mentality. And then you're dependent on things you can't control, which bring you anxiety. Devotee's neutral. That's not just like the coward boys. They were told by Krishna to ask the Brahmins in charity, and the Brahmins didn't give them anything. The Brahmins didn't even talk to them. I mean, answer them. But Krishna was pleased. And that was enough. That Krishna is happy. Devotee success is, am I pleasing Krishna right now, this moment? Am I in yoga now? Yoga is not something to achieve in the future. Am I in yoga now? Am I connected with yoga, with Krishna in yoga now? That's my success. Not that I'm working hard for some future fruit, some future uncertain fruit. And they see everyone as having actually good qualities. Like here, the demons, they see everyone as having bad qualities except for them. The demons actually see the good qualities of others as faults. They see Vishnu being in everyone's heart as a fault. They see Brahma being doing tapasya as a fault. But the devotees see everyone's behavior as good qualities. I just read this really, really funny story in Mukunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on the Second Avenue. And he was saying that some friend of the temples rushed in with a newspaper article about how people were throwing rocks at Prime Minister Indira Gandhi because there was no rain. And Prabhupada said, oh, that's very good. And he wasn't saying it was good that they were throwing rocks at her. But he said, it's very good that the citizens in India understand that the government is responsible for the rain. That means they still have some Shastric basis in their lives. And he said, their anger means that they feel dependent ultimately on Krishna. He said, this anger that our leaders are not taking care of us is an indirect sign of God consciousness, that they're aware that they're not the controllers, that there's a higher controller. And Mukunda was astonished at the way that Srila Prabhupada interpreted things. So that's a fault. To throw rocks at somebody is a fault. That's sinful. Especially to throw rocks at your leader, at your authority. It's even worse than throwing rocks at an ordinary person. It's a highly immoral behavior. But Prabhupada saw good in it. He saw, oh, this means they recognize that there's an authority who's responsible to take care of. They have some consciousness that they're not the supreme. That's amazing. So the devotee sees like that, even in somebody's demoniac activities. They see, oh, this person's looking for Krishna. Prabhupada was talking about how another place, how there's only the 12 rasas everywhere. And he says, whatever anybody's trying to enjoy, they're actually looking for Krishna. He said, even if someone's a murderer, they're trying to enjoy a ghastly rasa. They're just doing it in the wrong way. They're just doing it in a way that's going to entangle them. So the devotee sees everyone's faults as good qualities. In fact, they only see good qualities. They only see everyone's looking for Krishna. So they see everyone else as Krishna's agent for my good. Everything is an opportunity for service. And they meditate on Krishna's pleasure instead of meditating on, you know, I'm so powerful, I'm so happy, I'm perfect. They meditate on how Krishna's powerful and Krishna's happy and Krishna's perfect. And the demons are making plans thinking, I'm going to have plan A and plan B and plan C. And the devotees make plans with detachment. Okay, I can make a plan for service, but it's not my plan that's going to bring me happiness. It's Krishna who's going to bring me happiness. And Krishna can change the plans. And he does. A lot. But that's okay. I'm Krishna's servant. You know, I'm not attached to the plans because I'm not attached to enjoying the fruit, my imagined fruit from my plans. I'm attached to Krishna being happy with me. The devotees have attachment. It's not that we don't have any attachment. We do have an attachment. My attachment is I want Krishna to smile at me. Prabhupada said the residents of Vrindavan, they're just thinking, will Krishna smile? Will Krishna smile? And he said in regard to the story of Akura, he said, if you're not trying to be recognized by Krishna, then your whole life is condemned. So that the devotee is attached to that Krishna will be happy. And that I will be a catalyst for Krishna's happiness, that Krishna will be happy with me. Just like even with other people. You know, you cook for somebody because you want them to enjoy what you've cooked. You want to have something to do with their happiness. You want them to be happy and you want to have some part in it. So that's our ultimate desire, that Krishna's happy and that I've had some part in it. Right? And we focus on connection with the moment, not with the fruit. We find peace now. Not that I'm going to do this and 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 then I will find peace. I'll make a lot of money, and then when I have a lot of money, then I can go to India, and then I can just chant without worrying about money, and then I'll be peaceful. You know, I'll have a few children, and then I'll be able to be renounced, and then I can focus on my service, and then I'll be peaceful. You know, I'll study all of Srila Prabhupada's books, and then I'll know all the philosophy, and then I'll be peaceful. Whatever it may be. You know, we'll develop self-sufficiency here, we'll actually have cow protection, and we'll grow all of our own food, and we'll find a way to grow grains in Ireland, and we'll build lots of greenhouses, and, you know, and then I'll be peaceful. Whatever. No, we're trying to be peaceful now. I mean, that's a very fruit of mentality. I'm going to work, and there's the fruit over there, and when I get to the fruit, I'm going to enjoy it. And then your fruit, by the way, when you have a fruit of mentality, how often do you get to eat the fruits? Not very often. It's just work, fruit. Work, fruit. Work, and sometimes you get to the fruit and there's no fruit. Work. Oh, birds ate it. God. Or you go bite it, there's a worm in it. Right? So you never know. You work, you never know if the fruit's going to be there or not. It might not even be there. Or it might not even be tasty. And then maybe, you know, if you're lucky, you get your enjoyment for a moment. And then again, work, the next fruit. So we can do this in Krishna consciousness too, by the way. You know, Maya's really clever. And she can take the same fruit of mentality and kind of sugarcoat it with an idea of spirituality. And then we think, you know, when the temple's built, then I'll be happy. When we get 10 cows, then I'll be happy. When I can renounce everything and go live in my poor, then I'll be happy. When I finally marry someone I love, then I'll be happy. So that's not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the fruits are for Krishna. That's for him. The success or failure, you know, do thou fight for the sake of fighting without considering victory or defeat. Honor or dishonor, gain or loss. That's Krishna's business. If there's profit or loss, that's Krishna, that's the company's business. No, it's not my concern. Of course I would like there to be something nice to give to Krishna, but you know, really, that's not even so important to Krishna. What's important to Krishna is that we have love. Krishna is not interested in the gift, he's interested in the loving exchange. That's part of that gift giving, that the gift just symbolizes. You know, if you leave your body just shopping for a gift for Krishna and you haven't even bought it yet, he's happy with that. You know, I used to meditate on this a lot as a Gurukul teacher. Because, you know, when you're teaching children, you tend to be very, very future-oriented. You tend to think, you know, the reason I'm teaching the children is so they can do X, Y, Z in their life. And I would meditate a lot on, suppose some of these children die now. I mean, it actually happened to one of my nursery students on Prabhupada's Vyasa Pooja Day. When she was 3, she drowned in the temple pool. You know, so what do you do? Does that mean it's all useless? I've often wondered about why these kids who have some terminal disease want to go to school. You ever read about that? Like some kids dying from cancer and they still want to go to school. What do you want to go to school for if you're going to die? Make any sense to me. Of course, I never liked school very much. But I thought, you know, what's the value of what these kids are doing in the Gurukul if they don't grow up and use it? And I really meditated as a teacher on trying to make every moment of school valuable now, that we could connect with Krishna now. And I also had this, I had to work that way in working on our books. Most of you have seen our books, our talking books. So when we started working on this project, there was no money and no team. We ended up with, you know, 200 people working on it worldwide, but in the beginning it wasn't like that at all. There was nothing. There was nothing. And there was no, we didn't have a publisher, we had no money. I mean, one devotee, Sitaram at the manor, he put up some money initially and he was the one who really got it started. And Pranaguru gave me a desk to work on and work at New Zealand. Then my neighbor, Kishanendu, gave me an internet connection. But that was it. So, you know, you're writing these books and you don't know if they're ever going to get off your computer. From a material point of view, there was one chance in a billion that anything would ever be published. would probably just be a, you know, document file on my computer. So how to be enthused? And I think that pretty much every other service that I'd done until that time, the external results were something more immediate and more certain. But in this one, they were not. I didn't know how long it would take, and I had no idea. So I thought, how am I going to be enlivened? And nobody ever asked me, not one person ever, even the people who provided me a place to work and so forth, nobody ever said, how's it going? Never. I was just telling this to Sita Rama, and he even put up some of the initial money for me to get specialized training. And nobody ever called me, emailed me, anything, Skyped me. What are you doing? What's your progress? Give us a progress report. Not one soul. The only thing anybody ever asked me is my neighbor would come by and, would you like some pumpkin soup today? Yeah. Would you like me to get you some oats? Can you give a class this week? So what was it? Well, how do you motivate yourself? It had to be a moment-to-moment thing. Okay, Krishna, I'm offering this moment to you now. I'm offering this moment to you now. I'm offering this moment to you now. And I would write a book and it wouldn't work, and I'd write another one and it wouldn't work, and I'd write another one and it wouldn't work, and I'd write a few sentences, and because you have like 15 words, you know. So this is your assignment. You have 15 words, all very simple words. You have to take those 15 words and write 8 sentences and create a story. It has to be a good story. And has to have something to do with Krishna. So that's what I was doing over and over again. And it's got to have these words in it. And it can't have any of these words in it. There's a whole list. Can't have those. Only have these words. And it must have these words. It must have as many of these words in it as possible. And only this number of lines. And only this kind of sentence construction. And it's got to be a story. It was really hard. And I was mostly failing. Most of my time, you know, 9/10 of the time, what I did was just rubbish. You know, you write a few sentences and you throw it away, and you write a few sentences and you throw it away, and you write a few more sentences and you throw it away. And days and days and days and days would go by when everything I did was rubbish. You know, and then sometimes you finally write something and then you show it to the other teachers. What do you think? Oh, it's terrible. You know, and then you have to go back and do it again and again. And you take it back to the experts. Oh, it's no good. And you do it again. And you don't even know if you're ever going to get artists or you're ever going to get publishing or anything. You know, and I learned that one could find peace. Just, okay, Krishna, this is for you now. 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 It doesn't have to be a success. Nobody ever has to, no one has to know what I'm doing. It doesn't have to be something external. The demons are very dependent on that. You know, I've got to live for a long time. I mean, why couldn't Kamsa just say, like Vasudeva said to him, you know, Kamsa, everybody's going to die. So what? If your nephew is the one who's the cause of your death. So what? Everyone's going to die. Big deal. No, I've got to control everything. I'm going to find peace by manipulating. I'm going to get all my blocks in a row, and I'm going to have everything, and then I'll be peaceful. And the devotee's like, I'm never going to get all my blocks in the right place. It's never going to happen, not in this world. Forget it. You're never going to have everything set up just the way you want it for more than 5 minutes. It's just not going to happen. You know, you'll get this and this, and this, like, yes, I got it. And then something happens. Isn't it? Always. Okay, now I just need to make this change. Okay. Stay. Now, I need to make this change. But the devotees aren't like that. The devotees are right now, whatever situation I'm in, perfect, imperfect, wonderful, not wonderful, pleasing, not pleasing, auspicious, not auspicious, friends, enemies, success, failure, honor, dishonor. I got Krishna. Nir yoga kshema atmavan. Don't worry about gain and safety, Krishna says, 245. Be established in the self. Yoga kshema bahamyaham. I'll take care of all your gain and safety. You don't have to make all these plans. And if you do that, then everything is successful and everything is peaceful and everything is sure. If I'm connected to Krishna now, and now, and now, and now, and now, then I have no anxieties. He's always there. He's eternal. He's always the strongest. He's always the most clever. He's always the most loving and the most caring. And therefore, everything I do is perfect. And everything's sure, and everything's secure, and everything's safe. And then I have peace. And from that platform of peace, then I can actually be happy. Happiness, of course, is in service. From that platform of peace, mad bhakti labhate param, then I can actually engage in bhakti. We're thinking, I have to arrange my externals to make me peaceful so I can engage in bhakti. No, you got to arrange your internals so you're peaceful and you can engage in bhakti. Not the externals. I mean, externals are, it's all right. We put some pictures of Krishna on our wall and clean our room and try to be around devotees. But, you know, you can't control that either. There can be a war, you get an oppressive government, and they can arrest all the devotees and put you in prison with rats and criminals, and there won't be any pictures of Krishna on your wall. And if you're dependent on the Krishna pictures of Krishna on your wall, and you're dependent on your library with the books in it, and you're dependent on the other devotees to be peaceful, it won't work. Like our Sarvabhavana Prabhu, who were in the end of our campaign to collect money to build him a house in Armenia. So if you read the book Salted Bread, so by distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in the former Soviet Union, he was in prison for 2 years. And in Siberian labor camps, and they'd say, where are you printing your books? Where are you keeping your books? Who are your leaders? Where are they hiding? And he wouldn't tell them, so they knocked out his teeth, and they knocked out the sight in one of his eyes, and they jumped on his back with boots, and they starved him, and they put him in prison cells where there was nothing to eat for 2 years. He only ate bread. You know, he didn't have any sadhu sangha. He had just criminals to associate with, not even just materialists, but actual rapists and murderers and child molesters and robbers. He didn't have a clean room. He had rats and, you know, a bucket for a toilet. He certainly didn't have any prasadam, and there wasn't any temple, and there wasn't any kirtans, although sometimes they'd have kirtans in the cell and get the other prisoners to chant, and then if they were caught, they'd get beaten. He didn't have any books. He had to go by whatever he had memorized. Couldn't even have any japa beads. They had a 5-day process to turn some of their bread into japa beads, so even a little bit of bread they got, they'd have to use some of it to make beads out of it. And they'd make a little string of beads that they could hide in their hand. And they were caught with the beads over and over and over again. Every time they were caught with these bread beads, the beads would be taken away and they'd be beaten. And actually beaten, not just like, you know, they slap. And then they'd make the bread beads again. You know, so he didn't have anything. He didn't have deities, he didn't have prasadam, he didn't have devotee association, he didn't have books, he didn't have prasadam, he didn't have cleanliness, he didn't even have solitude, beauty, anything. And yet he had peace. Because he's thinking, I'm here, this is my service. I'm here protecting Srila Prabhupada's books. I'm here protecting Srila Prabhupada's movement. I'm honored to give my right eye and my back to Srila Prabhupada. I'm honored to give him for the sake of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, I'm doing this for Krishna. And therefore he was fixed as a devotee, even in prison. So this way the devotee finds peace. The devotee's peace and success is not dependent on their external situation. And therefore they have no false mentality of being the controller, nor do they have to interpret the world in terms of friends and enemies. And therefore one's free. As Krishna says, not dependent on the ordinary course of events, one is then free. That I'm not dependent on any other living entity, as Krishna says, I'm not dependent on circumstances, I'm not dependent on anything for my happiness, because my peace and my happiness are with it. So, I had planned to end early today. Oh well. Questions, comments, corrections?
Is the book called Salted Bird?
Yes. And what's happened to him is he's gotten older now, so he's just not able to work. The health problems from being beaten in the prisons combined with getting older. So we just collected some money for his back treatment. He was telling me that now he's as long as he doesn't lift anything heavy, he's okay, and we just also collected for him to get all the dentures. Says the first time he's been able to chew in 20 years. And now we're at the end of collecting money for getting the house. We have almost all the money collected now. Probably about another $10,000. And we're trying to build a house in Armenia so we can be taken care of. We took a very long time to take care of this devotee. We should have taken care of him 20 years ago. I mean, Hare Krishna. Better late than never. My point about him is that he's, you know, if you read his story, you can see that Krishna consciousness is not dependent on external situations. And peace and happiness are not dependent on externals. One of the most extraordinary parts of that book is how his friend, who was also in prison with him at the same time, Sachisuta, how he left his body in the Siberian labor camp. So they were separated in the Siberian labor camp. He didn't have any devotees even in the same prison. At least in the other prison, there were devotees in the other cells. So you could risk when the guards were out, you know, trying to get them a message. Of course, you'd often get caught and beaten, etc. But so his friend died in the labor camp, and they never really knew how he died. And a couple years later, they met a gentleman who had been in the same cell as Sachisuta. And Sachisuta had gotten very sick from malnutrition and the cold and beating, etc. And this man said, he said basically, you know, Sachisuta hadn't been able to get out of bed even. But one day he got out of bed, and he asked his cellmate to shave his head except for Ashika. And then he took one of the magazines they had there, and he took a page and folded it and made like a garland out of the magazine pages. And he took the toothpaste and put on some tilak. And he sat down in the middle of the room and started just chanting. And this gentleman who was telling the story, he said, I had to go and see the doctor because they were in the medical wing, which doesn't mean you get much medical care, by the way. They were in the medical wing of the labor camp. He said, I had an appointment with the doctor. He said, and when I came back, he was still just sitting in the middle of the room smiling, but he wasn't chanting anymore. And I said, hey, you know, I started pushing him. When I pushed him, he fell over and he died. So even in that circumstance, you know, therefore the devotee is free. You're not dependent on the ordinary course of events or auspicious or inauspicious things or setting up the world to be a success. Very inspiring story. I mean, he also talks about how they were starting the movement in the Soviet Union, you know, how they were, you know, getting their own printing press and printing the books and gluing them together themselves, etc. It's fascinating. They never knew when the KGB was going to come and raid them. Most of the devotees, after, you know, being arrested and in jail for a day or two here and there and being beaten up, would stop distributing books. Very few of them went on and continued to take the risk. And of course now in Russia, our movement is growing the fastest of anywhere in the world. Any other questions, comments? Thank you. All glories to Shri Prabhupada. Thank you.